Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our friend Arthur Staple from Newsday. He covers the New York Islanders. Arthur, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Glad to be back.
Arthur, it's amazing that, you know, I guess it was probably about 3 months ago, maybe 4 months ago at this point in time, before that Sunday evening Jets-Islanders game, that we'd be sitting here today and saying that this game is a key game in the race for playoffs in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, it might be, you know, kind of the key game to see who gets in and who doesn't. It's been a wild up-and-down ride, I think, for both teams. You know, the Islanders in particular, they didn't start off very well, and they've been one of the best, you know, two or three best teams in the Eastern Conference in the last month, and Winnipeg's trying to match them pretty well.
You know, obviously, I think the hockey world is just now coming around to what a talent and what a skill set John Tavares possesses. You know, is he, in your mind, is he deserving of the Hart Trophy?
I think he's certainly in the conversation. You know, it's hard for us beat writers to really, you know, in a regular season of 82 games, it's tough to know who's doing well in the other conference. It's especially tough this year, but, you know, looking strictly at the teams that I've seen a lot, you know, in the East, I think it's Sidney Crosby still, despite the injury. I think it's Alex Ovechkin, and I think it's John Tavares. It's hard to make a stronger case than you could for those three guys. And like you said, you know, we were up in Toronto a couple days ago, and suddenly when you're in the center of the Canadian hockey world, everybody remembers what kind of talent this young man had when he was starting out in Canada, and it's just grown and grown even since then.
Arthur, we were previewing the Islanders forwards before you came on, and it's unquestionable that John Tavares is one of the best forwards in the NHL. At times you could say he might be the best forward in the NHL, but you know, he went three games without a goal. The Islanders have got points in every game in April. Is it, you know, time to start saying that they're not a one-line team?
Oh, yeah. I think you know, those of us around the team, which is, when I say us, it's really not that many of us, but, you know, throughout this season and then throughout previous seasons, you know, John, who's a guy who has maturity beyond his years when he's talking about his own team, has said often, you know, it can't just be him, because he's the one that gets shut down. And when you see him on occasion get frustrated because of all the attention he's getting, that's when other guys have to step to the fore. And this whole 10-1-2 run that they've had in the last 13 games is really, you know, he's the leader and he's the guy that makes the engine go. But it's been fueled by other guys like Kyle Pozo and Josh Bailey, guys on, you know, defense. Mark Streit has had a pretty good run this last month. They're getting scoring from all over the place, which is something that's sorely lacking for the last couple of years.
Arthur, you mentioned Josh Bailey, a guy who was maybe some people considered a reach in the first round a few years back. He's playing on the left side now, if that's correct. How has he matured, and how has he kind of come along as a player? Because some thought, you know, he was really going the wrong way for a while there.
Yeah, I think Garth Snow would probably acknowledge that maybe having him up as an 18- and 19-year-old was the wrong move. You know, he's a guy who's not a physically imposing guy, was not when they drafted him. He still may not be, but he's still got quite a bit. And, you know, I think he's gotten some confidence back. It happened a little bit at the end of last year when he had another ugly start, when Jack Capuano put together the line of Franz Nielsen, Calipozo, and Josh Bailey, and they had a good, strong final month of last season. Well, he was hurt playing overseas during the lockout. He missed the first 3 weeks of this season. It took him a little while to get going, but once that line was put back together again, he's really shown a lot of confidence. He's shooting the puck more. He's not looking to be a playmaker first, which is important to be on the wing with a guy like Nielsen, who is more of a playmaker. So he's embraced his role as a, you know, defensive forward first, and he's kind of given up on the idea, it seems, of being a center, which is how he started out. And he's been a pretty good scoring winger for them these last couple of months.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Arthur Staple of Newsday. He covers the New York Islanders. Arthur, you know, we were looking over the Islanders' defensive pairings earlier, and, you know, obviously, sort of, if you go pairing by pairing, the bigger names are Hamonic and Vishnovsky and Streit. Those are the biggest names on the three different pairings. You know, how well have they worked with their secondary players, the Matt Karkner, the Thomas Hickeys, and the Andrew McDonalds, to form really a defensive unit all in all?
It's been good balance. certainly. You know, McDonald and Hamonic have really played the bulk of the heavy minutes playing against the other team's best forwards these last couple of months, and they struggled with it at the beginning of this year. I think as maybe some defensemen, you know, you go from not playing for 4 months or playing sporadically overseas to playing 25 minutes a game against the Crosbys and the Ovechkins. That's going to hurt anybody's plus minus and confidence. But they've solidified themselves as a pair, and they've been playing very well. And really, maybe the unsung pairing is the Vyshnovsky-Thomas Hickey pairing. You know, Thomas Hickey is a guy they picked up off waivers. He was a fourth overall pick of the Kings, never really cracked their prospect heavy defense to get into the Kings lineup, and they brought him here. He actually wasn't even really playing very much when this season started. Another waiver pickup, Brian Strait, was playing very well. He got hurt. Hickey went in, paired with Vyshnovsky, and they both seem like they wouldn't be able to do too much. They're both pretty small guys in stature, but the ability to move the puck, which is kind of the key to the Islanders' speed game, the two of them have done it maybe better than anybody else on defense.
In terms of, you talk about the defense, and we talked about Tavares before and the forward group. The power play, Arthur, has been really good this year. It's, I believe, sixth in the National Hockey League right now. Based on watching kind of this year as compared to last year and years past, they've moved Nielsen off the point, and they have, obviously, Vyshnovsky has been a big addition there. Can you talk about why the power play has been so good?
I just think, Tavares, he's really been operating not really in much traffic. You know, they kind of have a setup. I think ideally Jack Capuano and Doug Waite, the assistant coach who runs the power play, had thought when Vyshnovsky got here he'd be bringing his heavy shot and blasting away. But he seems to have actually turned out to be more of a playmaker guy. He kind of moves along the half wall pretty well. Tavares kind of moves on the other half wall, and Strait is the guy who's the big banger at the point. And they've got Molson camped out in front. Brad Boyce has a pretty good shot from either circle. So they've got guys who know where their roles are. Nielsen was there at the point when Vyshnovsky, before he reported to the team. And the power play started very well because Nielsen is a pretty underrated playmaker. But I think this is a fivesome that really works well together. Tavares, obviously, and Molson have incredibly good and long-standing chemistry. They kind of know where each other are going to be. And Strait really is the guy that's made it go. And, you know, we talk about what his future holds as far as free agency coming up at the end of this season. I think if the Islanders' power play is doing this well and, gets them a couple of wins in the playoffs, Garcino may have to reconsider his stance on what to do with Mark Strait as far as next season and beyond goes.
Arthur, I wanted to ask you about Casey Cizikas, a guy that I just like his name, to be honest with you. No, I'm just kidding, but he's playing third-line center for the Islanders, and, he's contributing well. He didn't start off that great, but he's been contributing offensively. Should mention that sometimes he plays on the fourth line, but he has been playing a little bit on the third line. Maybe you can let us know where he'll be playing tonight. But Casey Cizikas is a guy that, has really given them some nice depth. Can you talk about his development as a forward?
He's really, this is what they envisioned him when they drafted him in the fourth round back a few years ago. He's an energy guy. He's a guy who plays bigger than his size. And he's contributed a bit of key offense, playing, limited 10, 11 minutes a night. He pops up on penalty-killing situations on occasion, but really his role is to get out there, try to win faceoffs, try to hit people. He plays a lot with Matt Martin, who's the NHL's hits leader. They really have formed a good depth energy line with him at the center of it. And his faceoff ability, I think, has surprised some of the coaching staff that he's come up, been able to win some faceoffs. He's a guy who goes out there. I think that was the reason that he supplanted Marty Reasoner as kind of that third, fourth line center. Reasoner's been a consistent, healthy scratch because Cizikas has shown he can win some key faceoffs, which is obviously a big thing. And, as a rookie, he's very poised out there. He doesn't overdo it with his energy. He doesn't take a lot of reckless penalties. So there's nothing not to like. He's been as big a key to their forward depth as Tavares has been a key to their leadership, I would say.
Looking behind the bench, and one thing that's always struck me about the Islanders coming through town over the past year and a half or so is how hard they play for Jack Capuano. Can you talk about his kind of emergence on the scene as a coach who can really get a lot out of this team? And he's really not spoken enough. Ezra mentioned last week we talked about Jack Adams' candidates, and he mentioned him as being a possible candidate. What's been your impression of the job that Jack Capuano's done this year, Arthur?
I think he tries to keep it pretty understated. He's not a super eloquent guy when it comes to media, so he doesn't draw a lot of attention to himself. And, he came in with so little fanfare. I think, I can't even really think of a coach that was hired, even in the middle of the season like he was 2 years ago, a guy who had so little regard around the league for his coaching abilities. And, really, I think the key thing that he's done is been able to take the temperature of this young kind of, unformed group and figure out when he needs to push them a little bit and when he needs to back off. And he did a lot of backing off last year when they were sputtering, not a guy who's going to crack the whip on them too hard. Scott Gordon was a little bit more like that, his predecessor, and I think that may have alienated some of their younger guys. So Capuano comes in, he knows when to ease off, he knows when to push them, and, with a young team, I think he's been right in the approach of letting them form their own leadership and their own character in the room and not trying to be too invasive and too intrusive. So, if that's the attributes that make a good coach as opposed to, strict X's and O's, which is, fully dependent on what your players can execute, I think he deserves to be in that conversation with Paul McClain and Michelle Therrien, because certainly they're going to end up being finishing up around where the Senators finished. So I don't really think there's much to say between the two of those.
Arthur, we'll let you go on this last question. We'd be remiss if we talk about the Islanders without mentioning the goaltenders. And, obviously Tim Thomas's influence has been tremendous on the on the Isles since they acquired him. But seriously, though, the stabilizing force of Evgeny Nabokov, can you talk about, what it's been like, how much it means to the players in front of the goaltender, knowing that they do have that veteran leadership behind them and the guy who can make most of the saves?
Yeah, he's been very big, and just as an aside, his play has been vastly improved. I think he had a good record. The goals against has gone down by about a half a goal over the last month or two, and I think he's really stepped up his game. But his presence in the room, he's kind of a goofy guy, but he's a veteran and he's been around and he speaks very plainly and honestly. And I've seen him a lot engaged in conversations with John Tavares, throughout this season, private one-on-one talks. They played a game in Montreal back in February when they were really teetering on the edge. They went down by two goals, and during a TV timeout, Nabokov, who usually stands off in the corner like most goalies, skated over to the bench, took his mask off, went up and down the bench, kind of reminding everyone that they're a good team, and they came back and won that game in overtime. I'm not saying that was the reason, but he's a guy who's maybe extending himself beyond what a goaltender usually does in a leadership role, and I think that's been a big key, and the way he's been playing obviously has been a big key. The way the guys have started to play in front of him has been a big key. So yeah, it's been, after all of the goaltending ups and downs for the last few years, and most people I'm sure will point to when Rick DiPietro was waived and sent down, they're about 10 games over 500 since then, so maybe that had an impact too. But they've got some stability. I know he's not signed for next year, but it's still a priority for Garcino to get him back, because they don't really have anybody they can trust right now, and this is a guy who's made a big impact as far as this playoff run.
Arthur Staple covers the New York Islanders for Newsday. Arthur, as always, thanks for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll see you later on this afternoon.
All right, thanks a lot, guys. Take care.
Take care, Arthur. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Crimson flames tied through my ears.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Arthur Staple for having just joined us to break down the Jets and Islanders game. 2 o'clock puck drop here.
You were so much older then. You're older than that now, Drew.
Thank you.
Man, I love McCartney.
That's very clever. You guys are both very funny. Yeah. Very funny.
Yeah, McCartney's the best, man. Keep that McCartney going.
I was so much older than
Drew's older than that now.
Apparently there's a big concert announcement. Obviously this is Bob Dylan, a.k.a. Bob Zimmerman, but
Robert Zimmerman.
Well, same thing.
I know.
Apparently, McCartney might be coming to town.
That's what the rumors are. Yeah. Haven't heard anything one way or the other, but I guess Monday the big concert announcement.
Right, and then McCartney might sing When I'm 64, which was influenced by Drew 20 years ago.
Clever. Very clever. Can we continue breaking down the game?
Why don't we just break down your confidence?
Goaltenders and the special teams for tonight's game.
We love you, Drew.
I know. I love you.
This is a special group we've assembled. A group that can torture each other for 4 years.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, something like that. We're going to break down the Islanders' penalty kill and power play in the next hour, like we do on our Wednesday show. Being that it's a big game today, we thought we'd break it down on the Saturday show as well. You just look at the goaltenders and the special teams. Is Andre Pavlik peaking right now? Is this the best he's been playing in the course of the year?
Yeah, that stretch in the middle there was playing well. But yeah, I think so, Drew. Based on the importance of the games that he's been playing, this is the best stretch he's had. That save against Carolina, I'm forgetting who took the shot there.
It was Justin Falk.
Justin Falk was an incredible save. He bit, you know, they talk about people get into the save percentage, they get into a bunch of stuff. He's been playing really well right now. Is he Henrik Lundqvist? No, but you know, also the Jets' defense isn't exactly the Rangers' defense either, so take that into account. And he's been really good, and when he plays well, the team plays well, and that's certainly not a coincidence.
Richie, you know, we're on the topic of goalies here. You know, advanced stats and stats in general are important. They tell you something, but that's just it. They tell you something. Throw those numbers out. I mean, if you're at that game and you saw that save and the way Andrei Pavlik has played for most of the year, he gives the Jets a chance to win, and sometimes he steals games for them. So whether his save percentage, sure, you know, the line between the great goaltenders and the good goaltenders in the NHL is probably a save percentage of probably, you'd say, 915 to 920, somewhere in there. So he's a little bit lower than that, but the Jets aren't the best team defensively. Now,
he's made the fourth most saves in the NHL this year.
That's a more important save than his save percentage. So throw that out with the Fenwick stats and, you know, the Corsi stats. To be honest with you, I only think that tells part of the story. Andrei Pavlik, on a night-in, night-out basis, and Montoya's only started three games, has been excellent. Pavlik has been very good. He's aggressive. He likes to stop the puck. And, you know, he hasn't worn down. I would like to have seen, I've said this on the show many times, like to have seen Montoya in a few more times. But Pavlik likes to play a lot. And, you know, with the exception of maybe that road trip, in New York, where they lost those games to the Islanders and the Rangers and the Habs about 3 weeks ago, you could see he was wearing down a little bit, and he wasn't playing his best. But I think that four-day rest probably helped Pavlik more than anybody.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, goaltenders, you know, it's a tough position. It's the most important position in hockey, as Don Cherry always said. But I think that four-day break really helped Pavlik. And he looks great. I mean, that save, sure, that's going to be the one that, you know, they're playing on highlight reels for a long time, and they should. But really, you think you're going to ask anyone on the Winnipeg Jets, you know, how they think Pavlik has played this year? They're going to say, every single one of them is going to say, he's awesome. He gives us a chance to win. Sure, he lets in the odd goals, but even the greatest goaltender of all time, Marty Brodeur, lets in some weak goals some of the time. So I think that's a bit of baloney. Pavlik is a great goaltender, as is Nabokov. And I think we have to stop, you know, looking at the stats and all that. I mean, the guy is an incredible goalie. He's under contract for four more years after this year. I think this year, and Richie, I think we need to talk about this too. Starting off with the way he played in Europe and the DUI, I think, and his tough start, I think he's responded quite well, and he deserves credit for that.
Yeah, you know, Andrei Pavlik's a good goalie. I don't think he's a great goalie. I think he's a starter in the National Hockey League. I do. I think he's between, you know, the 20th best and the 30th best, or the 10th best or the 20th best. I think that's a conversation you could have. I don't think he's in the top 10. But he has played really well here. And he certainly has the physical skills to do that. What I mean by that is he's big enough and he's athletic enough to be a really good goaltender, and he's obviously playing really well right now. And I don't think he gets enough attention in terms of how bad the Jets are defensively, in my opinion. And I think he has to bail them out a lot, and I think they're very poor as compared to other teams. So when you look at the save percentage stats, well, they have a certain amount of importance, and they do. Looking at it on a situational context basis, you also have to take into account the fact that you put him in Boston, his save percentage is going to be 915, 920, just because of the way they play defensively and the way they defend the middle of the ice. So there's lots of factors that go into it, but he has played great. When he plays great, the team plays well. And I think everybody in this room would agree that if he doesn't play well over the next four games, there's no chance they make the playoffs. They're not good enough to make it without him playing at top level.
I would agree. Probably more than any other player necessarily on the ice, if he's not at his peak.
Yes.
Or within 5% of his peak, the Jets just don't have a chance. They can't survive a poor Andrei Pavlik outing and still win games. I mean, and, you know, that's just the nature of their team at this moment, is that, you know, that's what they need from him. And he knows that. I mean, look, he knows that. He knows that as well as anybody. And he so far has been embracing that. Now, can he embrace it? You know, it's been five games in a row now. Now, granted, he did get the big break. Can he embrace it for another five games?
I do like his mentality. I think he's a guy who does like the pressure, and I like that about him. And I think he's a guy who doesn't get phased, you know, by a bad game even. So I think that confidence in himself is paramount for goaltenders. And you look at Roberto Luongo, and he's one of the best players in the National Hockey League, but mentally he does let himself get in the way, I think, himself. He gets down on himself. And I don't think Pavlik's the kind of guy who does get down on himself, and I don't think that can be forgotten.
Right. That's a good point, Richie. Luongo's the type of guy that his mentality, his demeanor can work for him, and it can work against him, because he can be at times the most confident guy in the world and nobody can beat him. But I think Richie's point is well taken, you know, a little bit earlier. I wouldn't say Pavlik is probably a top 10 goalie either, Richie, but it's so funny that we're still, you know, talking about this, and it's almost like we have to defend him. I mean, the guy has been in net for all five wins, and you know, he hasn't played, you know, he hasn't looked like, you know, he's stealing every single game, but he's still winning every game. And there's no possible way that Noel keeps putting him in night after night after night if he isn't confident in him. And I don't think that says that he's not confident in Montoya, because I've said this before. I mean, Montoya has played so little. He had the shutout against Ottawa after he missed a little bit of time there. And I think Montoya is a capable backup. But I would argue that you might want to re-sign him, especially knowing that Pavlik wants to play a lot. In an 82-game season, Pavlik might want to play 65 to 70 games. But I think that, you know, whether or not he's the 10th top 10 or kind of a bottom 10 goalie, I think he's earned the right to at least be a number one goalie. And you can say that, you know, if he has a bad game, that's rare. And on most nights, you know what you're going to get out of him. And I think this year he's really proven that.
I think that's fair, also, point by Ezzy. I think that's right in that. I think Noel trusts Pavlik and relies on him and likes to ride the horse a bit, because he knows that Pavlik likes to play a lot. I don't think it's necessarily a lack of confidence in Montoya. I do think that's a good point by Ezzy. I don't think it's Noel saying, I have to avoid playing this guy at all costs. I think it's, I'm going to ride Pavlik because he likes to be ridden, and that's likely when he plays best. Do I think they've overplayed him? I do. Yeah. But Pavlik's proven me wrong, certainly, in terms of his play down the stretch here. Now, I think it'll be interesting to see. You know, there's been a four-day break, and they've been playing at home, and they haven't played back-to-back. So I think that shows when they play Washington on the second half of a back-to-back. That might be a factor, you know, his fatigue there. But so far, the schedule's kind of broken down in a way that they can ride him here a little bit more than maybe they could have in an 82-game season, when you kind of are shuffling in and out usually in some back-to-backs and such. Obviously, the course of a longer season, you're also more apt to get tired.
Well, we're not suggesting this right now, but, I mean, there always is the option of playing Montoya versus Buffalo.
You can't play Montoya.
I'm not suggesting it, but, I mean, I don't think that it's necessarily an option that you shouldn't consider based on the games coming up. But I mean, that's where I differ a little bit in philosophy. I mean, that's just a subjective thing that I personally believe. But you know, if he wasn't going to do it 2 weeks ago, I think there's a very slim chance he would do it with these back-to-back games coming up on the road.
If they're going to die on that hill, as Bill Daly said.
Yeah. That's right. I mean, you've gone this far with Andre Pavlik, there's no second option. And he's done everything that Jets fans could hope for him. He's been everything that Jets fans could hope and the Jets management could hope this year. After a rocky offseason and lockout and everything else, he's bounced back, and he's proven that, you know, so far the investment they've made in him has been a good one. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're going to start breaking down the Isles' power play and penalty kill when we come back on TSN 1290. Down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Still to come in this hour, Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail is going to join us at about the 10:40 or so mark. We'll continue our breakdown of the Jets-Isles game by focusing this segment on the Isles power play, currently ranked 6th in the NHL. And as you would expect, John Tavares is one of the key reasons for that. And you look at their back end as well. Lubomir Vishnovsky and Mark Streit are two offensively talented guys.
They are two offensively talented guys, Drew. And kind of on Arthur, we asked him about the power play, and he obviously covers the team, and he set it up quite well. And how the power play works really is Streit at the Mark Streit. They have two Streits, but Mark Streit at the top of the blue line.
Let's get that Streit.
They have Vishnovsky at the blue line too, but he kind of roams, as Arthur mentioned. He roams on the left side of the ice. Vishnovsky is a very good skater. He can one-time the puck. He's got a good shot. And then they have Tavares on the half wall on his off wing. So that's on the right side of the power play. So if you look at the power play from Evgeny Nabokov down the ice.
Yeah.
I got Tavares on the right half boards. You have Strait at the top of the blue line. And then what you have is you have Vishnovsky's on the blue line, but he kind of roams back and forth. So he can go back door when Tavares has the puck, meaning Tavares can pass across the ice to streaking Vishnovsky, and he can put a nice shot on net there. What you also have is Matty Molson. And Matty Molson is a big guy. He's got good hands. He's really developed nicely. He stands right in front of that net. And he's tough to move. He's really tough to move. And it'd be interesting to see if the Jets take him out or if they front him, what it's called. But fronting, what you mean is you get in front of Molson. You try and block the shot before it gets in there. Or you try and clear the zone by cross-checking him. Clear the front of the net, excuse me, by cross-checking him a bunch. And, of course, you have Brad Boyes. And Brad Boyes will move, depending on where Vishnovsky is, Boyes will be on his off wing, which is on the left side of the ice. Or he'll move to the middle of the ice to kind of be a one-time shot and draw one of the forwards in. So they have five weapons. And you know, Boyes is not a great skater, so he kind of, you know, the power play is something that works quite well for him. He can find open space, and he's a shooter. But all those guys are dangerous in different ways, so that's why they're the sixth best power play in the league, and it's tough to defend. I mean, when you're trying to break down what to take away from this team, it's tough to pick out one thing.
We talk about, you know, when we do this segment on our Wednesday program, mm-hmm. on NHL Midweek, we always talk about, you know, who's the quarterback of the power play? Who does the power play run through? I'll flip that question. Who, you know, is John Tavares the guy who sort of is the quarterback of this power play? Do they defer to him and do they run through him?
Yeah, Tavares is still the quarterback of the power play, but he's Strait does a pretty good job of doing that too. And I like what Tavares will do. Tavares will set up on the half boards, but at times the puck will go back to Strait, and Tavares will kind of find, you know, good goal scorers find where the puck's going to be, and he'll sift through traffic and pop up where you wouldn't expect him, and he'd score. So you got to watch Tavares in terms of his movement too. And he goes to the net hard, and he's willing to take a little bit of a beating, and he'll go at you. So it's a power play that kind of has two quarterbacks, Drew, to your point, and guys who can shoot too. I mean, you think about all the shooters. Vishnovsky can shoot. Strait can shoot. Tavares can shoot. Molson can shoot. And Boyes can shoot. Not many power plays have that many shooters on there who also are able to distribute the puck for the most part. So a power play that can beat you different ways, like kind of like Washington in a different, you know, a different format, the 1-3-1 Washington uses, but at the same time, some similarities, but the ability of these guys to beat you with their shots and passes makes them difficult to defend.
I think it was really interesting what Arthur Staple said earlier on in the show about Doug Waite. Doug Waite was a really good power play player
absolutely.
For the Oilers and a little bit for the Islanders, but that was towards the end of his career. He's the assistant coach, also the advisor to Garth Snow. But I think, you know, when I look at the Isles power play and what's really interesting about the Isles power play is how much skill and movement you have with Mark Strait and John Tavares especially. I mean, Mark Strait, you remember on Montreal when they had Strait and Markov.
Yep.
They had one of the best power plays in the league. That was 3 or 4 years ago now. But he's always been a very good power play player, and he is a guy that can move the puck, and he moves around. And you mentioned Matt Molson as well. Matt Molson is so good at feeding off of John Tavares, who loves to find him, and they can work it around. They can cycle it in the corner. He can also hit him with that cross-crease pass. But there's so much movement on that power play. And then you throw in a guy like Lubomir Vishnovsky, who's older, but he's also a guy who used to play the point on the power play for the Ducks and with a lot of success. So you've got two offensively-minded defensemen who can move the puck, around, switch sides. There's a lot of things going on there. And we mentioned it. The Jets had success staying out of the penalty box against Carolina, but they got to do the same thing against the Islanders because they will burn you if you give them enough chances.
Really good point by Ezzy in terms of talking about Dougie Waite, and Arthur mentioned it as well, and John Tavares. John Tavares sets up where Dougie Waite, you know, for our younger listeners who may not remember, I'm dating myself a bit here.
Yeah. So hang on, are you admitting you're somewhat old?
Not somewhat old, Drew, but, you know.
Getting a little bit gray?
No, Drew, come on. Take it easy on me. But what you have is Dougie Waite on the right half boards. Dougie Waite used to set up in the old Edmonton Oilers days, post-Gretzky, pre-this squad. On the right half boards. And Dougie Waite was a great passer, great vision, liked the puck on his stick, could find the seam, could do a lot of things. But Dougie Waite couldn't shoot the way John Tavares can shoot. And Dougie Waite didn't go to the net as much or wasn't as strong as John Tavares is. So Tavares is him, but even better. And so he makes it more dangerous. You could play a little bit off Dougie Waite when he was on the half boards because he wasn't going to kill you with a shot there. Whereas Tavares, you can't play off of him too much because if you play off him too much, he snipes it. You play close to him, he finds the open spot. That's why he's so dangerous. That's why guys like him and Crosby are so dangerous. It's like Gretzky. You know, you give him too much space. You get so worried what he's going to do. You give him too much space, he kills you. You go at him, he kills you.
There's maybe 10 guys in the entire NHL. It's probably not even that high. Who, when they have the puck on their stick, mm-hmm. that you always think it's going in the net.
Yeah.
And the list is Crosby, obviously, and it's Malkin,
Antropov.
And it's Ovechkin. and it's Stamkos, and it's Giroux, and Tavares belongs in that group.
Yep.
People might not know it, but they're beginning to know it just because of what he's doing this year. And he's the guy, I mean, you just have to key on him because he's going to kill you if you don't.
Well, yeah, but with this power play.
The problem is there's other weapons.
You're
going
to play over on him. They're going to put the puck to the point, and they're going to pick you apart other ways. So it's
pick your poison.
It's really important to stay disciplined today. And you know, a simple way of talking about the Jets' PK is not chasing too much, not getting out of position. You know, staying in a box, trying to make it difficult to get the shots through, and not chasing. I want to talk about the second power play unit here quickly before we
go to
break.
I just have a quick question about that.
Sure.
You mentioned not chasing. When you got a guy like Vishnovsky who sort of roams the ice, like you say, how difficult is it to not get caught sort of chasing him and moving around when you have a guy who's always circling?
It's a good question, but it depends on your discipline. If you keep that box tight and you don't really let somebody get in there, what happens then is he's staying on the outside, Drew, and you can block the shot as much as possible.
Second power play unit. Let's break that one down. Obviously, you're not going to see it as much.
You won't.
It's got Travis Hamonic and Andrew McDonald sort of at the points.
That's Or
as the defense. Kyle Okposo, Josh Bailey, and Franz Nielsen are the forwards up there.
Nielsen can play the point, too, so it depends on what they're going to do there. But, that's that second line playing with their top defensive pairing. That's when they're playing together, that's an overload power play setup, as they say. And so Hamonic and McDonald kind of play. They're both defensive defensemen. And so what they do is they kind of play on the blue line for the most part. They'll move a
traditional power play.
And you'll have Nielsen will play on the half wall as a passer. You'll have Okposo in the corner and kind of Josh Bailey in front. And that'll switch based on the side that they're on. And not the most dangerous power play, Drew. Certainly not one that's going to kill you from the back end. So for this one, you want to quite simply make sure that Okposo doesn't take up too much room in front. And Bailey and Nielsen aren't very big. So the second unit isn't going to kill you. So long as you don't get caught with them, just use size. You can really, so long as you take advantage of them along the boards, they're going to try and pass their way through it. But this shouldn't be the difference. If the Jets get scored on by the Islanders' second power play unit, I would bet that they wouldn't win this game.
Right, and you hope that the Jets are able to completely stay out of the penalty box, but most likely they're going to give up a few power plays. And whether it's Alexander Burmistrov or James Wright on the first unit, or if it's Eric Tangrady, Andrew Ladd, or whoever is out there for the forwards, they're going to have a tall task, because even with that second unit, when you throw out Franz Nielsen, he's a good playmaker. And the defense are going to have to do their job and box out forwards in front of the net. Even a guy like Kyle Okposo is a guy who can get in front of you and get to the net, and he's got a good scoring touch. So again, they're a really good team, mm-hmm. and an underrated team, and their power play, there's a reason why it's six. I mean, it's not just luck. They know when they get the chances, they're going to bury them, but especially that first unit, Richie's right, that first unit is unbelievable. There's so much speed, so much movement, and the Jets are going to have to, be playing their A PK game in order to shut it down.
And this isn't the first unit that's going to come off with 55 seconds into the PK.
Well,
they'll stay on for that minute and a half.
This is a minute and a half of a power play unit, minute and a half. So, you're going to be seeing the second power play unit at the tail end for the last 20, 30 seconds, at most, right?
Yeah. I mean, and good players, they'll take a little extra time, especially because, it's not like you have Crosby on one power play and Malkin on another one, and they know they got to split it. I mean, drop-off from Tavares to Nielsen, and I like Franz Nielsen.
Yeah, but I don't think he's going to go to Jack Capuano after the power play. John Tavares was taking up too much of his time. I just don't see that happening. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to break down the Isles' penalty kill, which is not as good as the power play. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Casey you couldn't tell by the music selection, Remus is now in the studio as producer. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Michael Skrillex.
The only guy who plays this kind of music at 10:15 on a Saturday morning. You going to a rave later on tonight, Remus?
This was like Rock'em Sock'em, remember that? This is like Rock'em Sock'em 3 music.
Got to get ready for the game, man. Get pumped up.
Okay.
Well. This is our game day music now.
Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. We spent last segment breaking down the New York Islanders power play. We'll talk about the New York Islanders penalty kill right now. 22nd in the NHL, so certainly as good. Are you surprised that with a guy like Franz Nielsen, who's really known more for his the defensive side of his game than he is as a as an offensive juggernaut, are you surprised that it's down to 22nd in the NHL?
Yes and no, not just based on one player, but this is a unit up front that has a lot of speed. You know, I guess I'll go over their units first and how they kind of employ their PK pairings. But Nielsen plays with Grabner, so that's a really fast pairing. Not the biggest guys in the world by any means, but very fast, and they're quite aggressive. And their first pairing defense is Travis Hamonic and Andrew McDonald. Couple things to note. Andrew McDonald and Hamonic block a ton of shots.
Yep.
McDonald actually leads the league in shots blocked. Hamonic is 13th. So getting the puck through those guys, and they sacrifice their bodies, really solid defensively. Although McDonald had an awful game the first time around when the Islanders were here, I expect him to play a lot better, because he was not good in that game. But when you're playing against the second pairing of their penalty kill, and you rotate a lot on the PK, as in Vishnovsky and Hickey, that's a pairing. See, that's when you get to the question of why aren't they that good. Well, a pairing like that, I mean,
undersized, not known for their defensive play, can be abused along the boards.
Undersized is really an issue, because you put the puck in deep, and you know Nielsen and Grabner aren't that big. Their second forward group is Cizikas, or Bailey, depending on what they want to do, and Matt Martin. Matt Martin is leads league in hits, as Arthur mentioned. Arthur Staple of Newsday mentioned. Very physical. Not the best skater. But aside from him and maybe Hamonic, you're really talking about a small penalty kill unit. So if you get the puck in deep, you can get the puck off the boards. And what that helps you do is set up. And when you set up, you have more offensive zone time. When you have more offensive zone time, you're more apt to score. Hence, one of the reasons why they're 22nd in the league.
And one of the big problems the Jets have had this year on their power play has been that they haven't really been setting up well.
Well, I think, you know, talking about the Islanders' PK here and what Richie's talking about, I'm a little bit surprised in the sense that they're 22nd. Maybe not so much because of the defensemen, and they lack more of Travis Hamonic. They need, if they had another Travis Hamonic, maybe this would be a different conversation, but Franz Nielsen, you know, is, we've said this again and again, maybe he's not underrated to us, but he might be underrated in NHL circles as far as how good he is defensively. Almost reminds you of like a Yuri Lehtinen as far as the way he plays. But him and Grabner are really good. Grabner's the type of guy that he's so quick, he can explode and turn a, you know, shot into an advantage, a penalty kill advantage the other way. But you know, just talking about the forwards that they have on both units, Casey Cizikas, I really like. He's aggressive. And then Matt Martin, a super physical guy.
Yeah.
I think that the Jets, when they get on the power play today, this is the type of team that you want to work down low. You want to get Blake Wheeler, Brian Little, Andrew Ladd, or if it's, you know, Evander Kane out there with Wellwood and Jokinen. You want to get these guys going down low. Sure, you always want to work it around to Byfuglien, but I think this is a team you want to use your speed. You want to work them down low. You want to take advantage of their defensemen more so than, you know, trying to, you know, load it up for a point shot. Because as you said, Richie, they can block shots and they've got speed. So I'd like to see them, you know, work the triangle with Little and Ladd and try to move in off of the ringette line and you know, try to get it going like that. And you know, the Jets' power play—that's a whole nother, you know, story. They haven't been able to exploit much teams. But, you know, the Islanders, they have a good chance of exploiting that because, you know, once you get those defensemen moving, you know, that's when you're going to open it up a little bit. And Ladd, Little, and Wheeler have shown a lot of chemistry and the ability to do that, just not, unfortunately, not on the power play.
Zone entry, people talk about a lot. You know, putting the puck in deep here against this team, you should be able to retrieve it when you have more guys on the ice. One and two, you're generally bigger than they are. couple things the Islanders like to do. They're pretty aggressive on the point man, so they want to push the puck down to the half boards, which the Jets aren't necessarily great on the half boards. But their speed of Nielsen and Grabner, for example, they get on you quick. If your defenseman is going to move along the blue line with the puck, they're going to follow you and switch sides. And sometimes that can create some issues because it ends up kind of being like a T, like they have two defensemen and their forwards are lined up one over the other. If you're a quick moving puck moving team, you can take advantage of that at times because the forwards can get mixed up in communication. And also when the puck is down low, because I think of the lack of size, especially in that second unit, what they do is they collapse really low to support. And when they collapse really low support, that means that the point man is wide open. And so they'll take their chances because they're so good at shot blocking that the puck's far, they'll try and block the shot. But you can use the points, and I think that's a strength of the Jets. So while they're not great on the half boards, they're very strong at the blue line, and they have good shots. Bogosian's got a good shot. Bufflin's got a good shot. Postma's got a good shot. So all those guys could be key, as usual, in terms of power play today.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned. It's almost like the Jets almost have to employ sort of two different strategies on the power play depending on who they're playing against.
Okay, because adjust.
Yeah, because Hamonic and McDonald, like you said, are bigger guys and they're stronger and they're more you stay at home defensemen, so you can't really abuse them as much down low and on the half boards as you can against the second pairing defensemen.
Yeah, Hamonic's more difficult too than McDonald because he's not that big. But yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's almost like the Jets have to take against Hamonic and McDonald. They probably don't want it to be along the half boards as often, whereas against Vishnovsky and Hickey, they're more okay with that being where they establish the setup.
Well, and we should mention this too, Richie. I mean, we break this down, and every team, even though, there are a lot of moving parts, every team has number one units on special teams, just like they have number one units on 5-on-5, and it goes down the line, but... the game earlier in the season, everybody will remember the way Evander Kane and Hamonic were going at it, matching up against each other. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if Noel tries to get Kane up against Hamonic, whether it's on the power play or just in general, if he can get that matchup. And at home ice, you can get that matchup, as you mentioned, Richie. But Kane is a guy that I think is better at dealing with that physical play than Wheeler. Now, Ladd can also deal with that type of physical play, and when the Ladd-Little-Wheeler line goes up against Hamonic and McDonald, that's fine. But I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to get Kane going up against Hamonic, because I think Kane really gets engaged, not only against him, but he gets engaged when he's playing that physical game. That's why I think look for Kane to step up his game, because he hasn't scored the last couple games.
That's a good point, Ezzy. I think another thing to note is the Islanders really rotate two forward pairings. And that's a little bit rare. You'll see a fair amount of teams roll three forward pairings, meaning three sets of two guys to come out on the PK, because they play about 25, 30 seconds a shift. What the Islanders do is they just rotate. So if you do get a lot of PK time against this team, you can wear them down quite a bit. Now, they don't employ their top players in the PK, as I think the Jets have succeeded in doing, more so than the beginning of the season. And when you look at it, Matt Martin's a fourth-line guy, or third-line guy. He's a third-line guy, excuse me. And then what you have is Nielsen, a guy who's playing second line. And then you have... I'm trying to remember exactly who it is. Sorry, Nielsen, Grabner. Grabner's playing third line. So Grabner's able to play more on the PK because he's playing on the third line, and it's not as, not playing as big minutes, not playing the first line, not being the 30-goal scorer that he once was. So that's important to note also. And... if you look at it, when you're rotating through two guys all the time, well, maybe they're not playing as many 5-on-5 minutes and they're not playing against the other team's top players. It's important to note that if you do get a lot of power plays in the game, that it's very possible the players who are employed, maybe more so than other teams, wear down.
So, by the fourth power play, if you
goes both ways. One way is they wear down. The other way is they start playing players in the PK who don't play that often and they're not as good.
Right. I mean, especially if you're throwing out a guy there or if one of these guys takes a penalty, if one of the Islanders' penalty killers takes a penalty, and, simply by the fact of not having as many penalty killers, quote unquote, as a lot of other teams do, then you've got guys who are playing out of position or playing in roles they're not terribly familiar with, an advantage for the offensive team in that situation.
Because their fourth line last game was Martin, Cizikas, and Bolton. And Bolton you'll see very rarely, but fourth line guys don't play a lot of minutes, they can load him up on the PK. But there's only so much you can play on the PK.
Bolton, of course, being the guy who scored the last hat trick for the Winnipeg Jets Atlanta Thrashers organization.
Unbelievable, eh?
Yeah. 7-1. It's funny because
he
beat Montreal years ago.
He must only have 10 or 15 career goals. He's a fighter. Yeah. So it's funny that he was the last guy to get a hat trick. But I think that's where you see the Islanders' depth start to thin out a little bit versus the Boston Bruins or the Pittsburgh Penguins. That's where their depth. You kind of see it, okay, they don't have many options there. You know, they're not going to put Matt Karkner out there, on the penalty kill. The guy's just too slow. But, you know, again, the Jets have an opportunity on the power play against a weaker team. They don't have the best penalty kill. And, you know, this is a team that it does scare me, too, because their forwards do have the ability to take advantage, you know, if the Jets get too overzealous on the power play. But, you know, it's there, and the special teams battle is going to be a tough one with their great power play. But in the penalty kill, you know, the Jets have got it going a little bit here on this homestand, but still not as much as you'd like. And really, it could be the key to the game, you know, staying out of the penalty box and then maybe getting a power play goal to boost your team when the game's tight. Because, you know, the last few games, the Jets have won and they've given up the leads, but the first period, it's kind of gone either way. So if they can take, you know, it's funny. One of the negatives, we don't want to go back and, you know, look at that Carolina game again. But the Jets only scored one goal, I think, on 6 power play opportunities. Yeah. You know, if they scored a couple more goals, then, you know, that gives them a bigger cushion. So it's one of those things, again, they have the opportunity to take advantage of a weaker team, specialty teams.
Eric Bolton, 27 career goals.
Not a lot.
Not a lot, but
three. I'm surprised he has that many, to be honest with you.
613 career games, has he?
Part of the Greek god line for the Thrashers with Jim Slater and Thorburn.
Yep.
There you go. So you know he's got some familiarity with the guys on the team.
You could say that was the inspiration for the GST line because then Glass came in there and I came up with the name. But it was a great name, Greek god line. Remus is sneezing over there.
I noticed how you just sort of threw Jay Richardson and his creative influence on the GST line right under the bus there.
No, I didn't throw him under the bus. We both created it.
Well, now we both. Before, it was just you a second ago. Now it's back to both. Well. Anyways, let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You feel it, baby?
Shortly past 10:30 in the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Still to come on the program, Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail is going to join us in about 10 or so minutes' time. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Tim Nutt is in town. Very funny comedian. I've seen him numerous times. Just a really funny guy.
Is he going to bust a nut?
There's a lot of nuts out there, Drew.
If you're looking for something to do after the Jets game, two shows at Rumors, 7:45 and 10:30. Tim Nutt in town at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
I had a rumor we're going to talk about the keys to today's game.
It's not just a rumor. It's something I told you during the commercial break. So we've broken down, these teams pretty much as possible. The forward groups, the special teams, the defense, everything along those lines. What is your key for the Winnipeg Jets to win tonight's game?
I don't think it's one key.
Oh, okay. What are your keys?
There's a number of keys, Drew. We talked earlier, and we talked about this before, about the matchups and how important it is to get Bogosian up against the Tavares line as much as it's important to get Byfuglien away from defending anybody who's really talented offensively. So I think what you're going to see is that's going to be really important to see how Claude Noel is able to get matchups. I think also, you know, you talk about not taking penalties in terms of the Islanders' power play. Sure. In a utopian world, you're not going to take any penalties. But you're going to take some penalties, likely, and you need to be able to defend that power play. And I think discipline in terms of the Jets' penalty kill is going to be vital. Don't try and take a risk. Don't try and be stupid. They can kill you that way. Just be smart, be disciplined. And I think that's going to be important. So the Jets' penalty kill is going to be very important. Getting Bogosian up against Tavares. And, of course, he has to shut him down. I mean, you get him up against, and that's one thing. Shutting him down is a whole different story. That's also going to be very important. And then you look at, in terms of taking advantage of the Islanders' PK and it not being great. Of course, the Jets don't have a good power play. We've talked about all these things throughout the show today. The Jets don't have a great power play. But I actually think that their power play sets up pretty well against the Islanders' PK and some of the strengths of the Jets. vis-a-vis the weaknesses of the Islanders, I think is quite a good matchup. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Jets succeed today on the power play.
Is he?
Yeah, for me, it's similar to Richie. There are many keys to this game because I think the Jets, you know, have shown that, you know, they can be inconsistent, you know, in their approach, and from game to game we see a different team. Although full credit to the Jets for their 5-game winning streak. I mean, they've got it done. They've overcome adversity and all that. But I think the special teams are key, so I'm not going to, you know, mention that because Richie already did a really good job of explaining that. But I think, you know, another key for me is to get Evander Kane going on that line. And on special teams, because I think he needs to take a little bit of pressure off of the top line. And the top line's got 30 points in the last 5 games. I think we've talked about that, and that's important. And if they're not going, then that's not going to be good for the Jets either. But I think Evander Kane is a guy who's, you know, quietly not really produced that much over the last couple games. And really in the second half of the season, he struggled. And I think that, you know, we're probably going to see him with Olli Jokinen and Kyle Wellwood again. But I think, you know, if you can get Kane going and engaged physically, and if the opportunity presents itself on the power play, I think that's another key. And I think, you know, a similar key is for Dustin and Byfuglien and Ron Hainsey to have controlled minutes and to do a good job of shutting down the Islanders' second line, because most likely we'll see Bogosian and Klitsam up against the Tavares, Molson, and Boys line. So I want to see that defense pairing play a little bit better. And, you know, I want to see Mark Stewart and Paul Postma play some more minutes, because I do think Grant Klitsam playing 25 minutes is a little bit too much. Another one of the keys is I want to see, you know, the third and fourth line have more minutes as well. I do think the Jets are more successful, when Chris Thorburn, Aaron Gagnon, and James Wright, those guys play upwards of 9 or 10 minutes as opposed to 4 or 5. So, I hope that Claude Noel rolls those four lines and all four of those lines are going as well. So I think, you know, this is going to be a very tough game, a very important game, but I ultimately think it's one the Jets can win.
Yeah, on Ezzy's point about Evander Kane, I think also another key to the game, and of course we mentioned that there are many, is the second lines of both teams. The second lines of both teams kind of set up to exploit the other teams. And these teams are top-line heavy. Doesn't mean that they only have top-line production, but they're top-line heavy. And you think about the Kane, Jokinen, Wellwood line. We talked about this before. You know, if they play up against Vishnovsky and Hickey, that's a line you can exploit against the boards. Conversely, you look at the Islanders' second line, and that's Josh Bailey and Franz Nielsen and Kyle Okposo. That line can move pretty good. Nielsen can move pretty good. Bailey can move pretty good. Okposo can move pretty good for a guy his size as well. And Byfuglien and Hainsey, you know, Hainsey would be locked up against Okposo, and that's a size issue for him in terms of how compact and tough Okposo is. But Bailey and Nielsen will provide some issues speed-wise from a Dustin Byfuglien who hasn't skated as well this year than I think in years past, whether it's because of injury, whether it's because of weight, whether it's because of just wearing down in general. I don't know. But those are things to watch out for, too. So there's a lot of matchups here that tend to make you think today's going to be a little bit of a shootout. I think it'll be a 4-3 game. I think the Jets will win 4-3. I wouldn't be shocked to see it go to overtime. But I think this is a game that'll be trading chances. I don't see it being a 1-0 game. Could very well be wrong. But just based on the style of play of both defenses and more offensively based, and maybe some of their complementary players maybe having a chance to exploit, I do think it'll be a 4-3 game for the Jets today.
Richie, I think, you know, that is a good point. And I think, you know, you talk about styles, and for the most part, because these two teams don't have the best, you know, defense groups, they have to play, you know, a kind of wide-open style. And that suits them better, to be honest with you. And it, you know, it can hurt you a little bit, but you have some pretty good goaltenders there as well. But I think that's a good point. And when you have that Ladd, Little, Wheeler line basically getting 5 or 6 points every night, they're tough to shut down right now.
It'll be interesting. The emotion, I suspect, will be quite high in the MTS Center tonight. It's the final game of the 6-game homestand. The Jets have won all 5 so far. Can they make it 6 in a row? We'll find out later on this afternoon. Let's go to break. When we come back, Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail is going to join us. You're listening to TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment for this Saturday morning. Hustler and Lawless following us with the Jets Islanders. More preview there than Rick Ralph in the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 1 o'clock. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our good friend from the Globe and Mail, Bruce Daubigan. Bruce, good morning. Thanks for waking up with us.
No problem.
You know, Bruce, obviously, you know, we're entering the stretch drive and the playoff positions and the playoff matchups are slowly becoming more in focus. You know, got to start with, if Montreal and Toronto end up meeting, and they end up meeting, let's say, in the first round, you know, how big do you estimate the number will actually be for viewership?
Well, my first question is there a chance that neither team can win a game? Where they're playing at the moment, but the numbers will be staggering. Typically, a good first round Canadian matchup for the Stanley Cup playoffs in the East will get you somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 million people. I would suspect that you're looking in the 2 to 3 million range if Montreal's there. Even though there's not a ton of English people left in Montreal, there's tons of Canadians fans across the country, and so I would expect you'll see a pretty healthy number there. And you know, CBC and TSN and the guys who have done the playoffs for a while have really had to sacrifice. You know, Calgary hasn't been in for a long time. Obviously, the Leafs haven't been in for a long time. They've missed some. Edmonton has been out. They've missed some real opportunities to get some TV audiences. So they're licking their lips for this one.
Now, Bruce, just to clarify, CBC has the first two choices in terms of Canadian teams, and then TSN gets the next choice if there is a Canadian team or the next best series. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's in the first round. That's how it goes. That's if you're the national rights holder in this contract, that's what you get. It'll be interesting to see. There's a new contract coming up for the fall of 2014, just how that distribution will be in that next one, because, boy, everybody wants those Canadian teams in the first round of the playoffs.
You know, Bruce, just to clarify, I guess, the second part of that, if two Canadian teams face off against each other, that still only counts as one series claimed?
Yeah, that's it. And then, of course, with Winnipeg in, that increases the odds of having Canadian teams in the playoffs, and obviously increases the odds of good audiences for the Canadian networks.
Bruce, if, you know, obviously it looks like Toronto and Montreal and Vancouver are all going to be in, and if Toronto and Montreal don't end up playing each other, does, you know, obviously the CBC picks Toronto first, but do they pick the Montreal series second and give Vancouver to TSN, or do they pick the Vancouver series and give Montreal to TSN?
Oh, I think it'd be, well, now, you know, part of it's also going to be on which night's teams play. You don't necessarily want to have both. The logical thing is Toronto-Vancouver. Those are the two best markets for the English language. But if they're both playing on the same night, that sort of leaves you with a bit of a gap on the other night. So there might be some consideration in terms of which nights they play if they play on opposite nights. But absolutely, if they have, you know, in an ideal world, that's what you'd do, and then you'd have the doubleheader, the Canadian doubleheader.
Bruce, we wanted to just quickly, we're going to still talk to you about the playoff races, but we just wanted to quickly ask you about, you know, the outdoor games. It was announced that there's going to be a few outdoor games in the New York area. I believe there's 24 outdoor games scheduled next year. And so, you know, my question for you for next year is, what were your initial thoughts, you know, when that was announced, now that there's going to be games in addition to the big game between the Red Wings and the Leafs? And do you think that, you know, some team should consider playing all 82 games outdoors going forward?
Well, considering the ice that I've seen some of the NHL games played on this year, I think they are playing outside. The ice is such terrible quality inside that it doesn't matter whether inside or outside. Yeah, I love the idea. I've always thought that, frankly, the All-Star game should be the outdoor game every year because, you know, the result doesn't matter. You don't have to worry about the quality of the ice. If it's a little rainy or whatever, you don't have to worry about guys because nobody's really killing themselves in it. I spoke to the Vancouver Canucks people yesterday about their outdoor game and just a little bit about it. They're quite excited about the potential for it, and they're okay because they could put the roof on BC Place if they have to, and that sort of thing will work out. But it does seem like a little bit of overkill. On the other hand, the thing you have to remember about what John Collins, who's the guy who's running TV for the NHL, is doing, the thing you have to remember about what he's trying to do is he's trying to create appointment TV viewing. He's trying to create TV viewing outside of the regular schedule. What he's trying to do is as we see with the draft, as we see with when they have the for the All-Star game when they drafted the teams. You know, the players picked the teams. They're trying to create TV programming, unique TV programming, and that's what this is about. And, of course, the reason for the volume of games is that they're trying to pay back fans for all this nonsense of the lockout, which was so pointless. They want to try to get back at everybody's good graces. And you know what? It works. I've been in the cities where they're having either a heritage game, is what the ones they call in Canada, or the Winter Classic in the States, and it gets the local community in on it. I think one of the games is going to be during the Super Bowl in New York City next year. So, you know, there's a lot of potential there for cross promotion for the NHL getting in on some stuff. And I think it's too many, but I also understand the context of the year coming off the lockout.
Is there any truth to the rumor, Bruce, that they're playing the Super Bowl in MSG?
This is what I think. If the NHL guys are going to go and play a hockey game in a baseball park, I think the baseball guys should have to come and play a baseball game at the ACC or at the MTS Center. Come on.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Bruce, you wrote about the inventory and in terms of the CBC and TSN saving inventory or opting not to, meaning not selling all their commercials right before the playoffs. And hoping for a long road for maybe a big Canadian team. Can you maybe update us on whether or not they've loaded up on all their inventory and what their strategy is for that?
Well, in terms of what the advertisers are looking at, what we talked about initially about the Canadian matchups, the advertising for the first round is being highly subscribed this year just because of that. The Toronto being in the market is a huge windfall for CBC, who need the money. Going into the last little bit of the season, they don't want to pirate too much of that. The big thing is that the major sponsors will want to coordinate the start of the playoffs, especially with the Canadian team, to some marketing strategy, a new program. We saw when the lockout came out that the Budweiser red light came out. You're going to see those kind of promotions built around the start of the playoffs. So the last week, obviously, there's going to be great viewership because people want to see who gets in. But for the most part, you're going to see the real push in that first week of the playoffs so they can coordinate a rollout of a product for beer or one of the other major sponsors.
And you talk about, obviously the importance of the TV deal being up at the end of next season. Is there extra pressure on the networks this playoffs to really do a good job to show the NHL, maybe not criticize them as much? Or is that going to be an issue, do you think?
Well, it certainly is. The only people who have that issue is CBC. And there's no doubt that the NHL had issues with the way Hockey Night in Canada, in particular Ron and Don, were doing the games, and that the fact that they were making themselves bigger than the NHL Shield. They didn't like the way Ron McLean was critical of the game. They felt that the CBC could be more positive. They don't have any of those complaints with Sportsnet or with TSN. But yes, you want to show your best foot forward. I mean, the most impressive thing that any of them can do is show how big a check they're going to stroke when it comes to. Again, we were just talking to some Vancouver people yesterday about the next contract, and the current one, for your listeners who don't know, the current one's about $100 million a year in Canada, and my estimate would be that they could easily get $400 million in Canada in the next contract. I see TSN, Bell being really aggressive about going after a national contract the way they did after the Vancouver Olympics. I see Sportsnet, and I also see CBC still in the mix. So I think if the NHL is smart, they could probably get themselves a really, really substantial contract this time around. And, that'll make Gary Bettman a hero, that's for sure. We're talking about Phoenix, we're talking about these American cities that are struggling. And people say, well, why are they even hanging around when they're losing so much money? It's because Gary Bettman has been holding this Canadian TV contract as a carrot for them down the road and saying, hey, don't hang in there. In another year, we're going to have an extra $10 million a year for you based on the Canadian TV contract. So it's going to be substantial.
Bruce, on that point, what you see in the other leagues, whether it be baseball or the NBA, you see the cross-promotion, at least between networks. Maybe it's mandatory by David Stern and by Bud Selig, but for example, in hockey, you don't really see the cross-promotion. You know, if a playoff game's on one station, they don't say the other playoff games can be found there. Do you see that being part of the next deal as well?
They do a little bit of it. I mean, it's not like they never will tell you where things are. There's a little bit of it. Certainly, I know that, when you're TSN and people want to know where the games are, et cetera, they do talk about it. But for obvious reasons, you don't want to make a big deal of it. You don't want to say, oh, by the way, go turn on the other network when we're already on the air. Mm-hmm. The coordination between the networks that you see, let's say, with the NFL, I think will be part of it, though. Because once all the dust is settled and we know who's got the contract, then there's you know, there's no point in sniping. There's no point in the rivalry. And the NHL is going to insist on coordinating. I think, as I've told you guys before, the thing you can look for in the next contract is for the NHL to create a sort of a hockey night on Sunday night, the way they've done with NBC has done with the NFL. That is the number one television program in the entire United States now, the Sunday night NFL football game. I think that the NHL sees the possibility of, let's say, giving a contract to TSN or Sportsnet, particularly TSN, for a Sunday night broadcast that way and having it be an extremely lucrative TV program. So there will be coordination and there will be some new product that you're going to see. And you know, Hockey Night in Canada has always been Saturday night, but look for another night to get a real big push.
Bruce, we'll let you go on this last question. You know, from a television perspective, both the Jets and Ottawa make the playoffs. Who's more desirable? Which team is more desirable, Winnipeg or Ottawa?
Partly would depend on who they would be playing in the first round. The handicap that the Jets have is that the central time zone might be a little bit of a stickler for them. Ottawa is, you know, especially if Montreal and Toronto are in the playoffs, Ottawa can easily kind of get looked over. If either Toronto or Montreal is out of the playoffs, Ottawa tends to take a bunch of their viewers. So I would say it's a wash this time. I don't think there's any particular advantage one way or the other. And again, it'll depend who teams play in the first round of the playoffs.
Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail, we thank you as always for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Some great insight into the television mechanics for the upcoming playoffs.
Okay, guys, enjoy.
Thanks, Bruce. Take care. One final segment. It's called Cheers and Jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
You've been so excited about your cheer probably for the last 48 hours.
Well, they just showed it on SportsCenter again. My cheer goes to Tommy Lasorda, who drops out the ceremonial puck as part of the ceremonial puck drop in L.A. on Thursday with the Kings and the Blue Jackets. Of course, the Blue Jackets had Jack Johnson take the faceoff against Mike Richards, the ceremonial faceoff, or Dustin Brown, excuse me, for the ceremonial faceoff. Tommy Lasorda, the former Dodgers manager, comes out, drops a puck, shakes the hand of Dustin Brown, turns around and walks off the ice. And then the LA announcers weren't sure if that was unintentional, and he forgot. And then they interviewed him during the game, and he said, "Well, I don't shake that. Why would I shake the hand of the opposition?"
And he probably sweared about a dozen times in between there, because Tommy Lasorda, an all-time classic baseball manager.
Legend.
Yeah, just a legend, of really sports, and especially in the L.A. region. Is he?
I'm going to make it 2 weeks in a row. I'm going to cheer Zach Redmond. He picked up his first point for the St. John's Ice Caps. It's unbelievable story. We've talked about it before, but it's nice to see him back in action on the ice, getting a point. It's a great story. It will continue to be a great story, so he gets my cheer.
Well said. I'll wrap up cheers and jeers, and I say this on behalf of myself, and I know it also speaks for the entire Illegal Curve family. I'm giving our cheer, and it's not hockey-related, but it's going to the police officers, the firefighters, the paramedics, and all the other first responders, both in Boston over the course of this last week, in Winnipeg, and all around the world. These guys really don't get enough credit for what they do on a day-in, day-out basis.
Those are the real heroes.
Those are absolutely the real heroes, because when we're running away from the situation, they're running towards the situation. And for everything that they do, they get my cheer for this week on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That's it for the program. We thank the following guests for having joined us: Arthur Staple from Newsday, Jack Edwards, the voice of the Boston Bruins, and Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes, also available on illegalcurve.com and on tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com. A big thank you to our sponsors, Bernstein's Deli, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the Linden Market Dental Center, the Elite Sports Injury Clinic, and the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. For my colleagues, Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock, for producer Remus and producer Tim, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Stay tuned for Hustler and Lawless. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.